Fulfilled Prophecy, Nostradamus, and the Bible by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract. Nostradamus is considered a true prophet by many people today, particularly by those into the occult or the New Age movement. Here, four prophecies of Nostradamus are compared with four from the Bible. We suggest there's a real difference between the two sources. When we think about prophecy and about fulfilled prophecy and such, we realize there's great interest in the future these days, probably has been for many centuries, and great interest in ability to predict the future. There have been numerous claims over the century to be able to predict the future. We want to examine two of the strongest of these claims, namely Nostradamus and the Bible. Nostradamus was born in 1503 and died in 1566. The term name Nostradamus is a Latinized version of the name of the individual Michael de Notre Dame. He was of Jewish descent, a French physician and astrologer, and began to make prophecies about 1547, so near the end of his life. These were published as the Centuries in 1555, and then an updated version in 1558. Now, the term centuries there does not actually refer to the centuries into the future, but that the prophecies were organized as quatrains, poetically, and each hundred of those was called a century. The Bible was written over a period from perhaps as early as 1500 B.C., to as late as about 100 A.D., with various authors. The authors claim to be speaking for the creator of the universe. The Bible is connected with the very famous historical figures Moses, David, and Jesus. Prophecies begin in the first book of Genesis and continue to the last book, Revelation. What we're going to do in our talk here is look at four prophecies by Nostradamus, and four prophecies by the Bible and make some comparisons. First one we want to look at is a prophecy apparently about the fire of London in Nostradamus' Centuries, Century 2, Quatrain 51. Here's how it reads in a literal English translation. The blood of the just will make complaint to London, burnt by fireballs in 23 the sixes. The antique dame will fall from the high place of the same sect. Many will be destroyed. Well, it's rather interesting that there was a big fire in London. In fact, the biggest fire London has ever had was in 1666, which could be reasonably called the Sixes. The city burned from September 2 to September 5. And if you take 9 as the number of the month September, and then add to that 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5, the days on which the burning took place, the sum 9 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 equals 23. And Nostradamus said, burnt by fireballs in 23 the sixes. That's certainly impressive. What do we mean by fireballs? Well, certainly the modern use of the term would not apply here as far as we know, but perhaps the idea of pieces of debris being carried along by the wind might be called fireballs, so that's certainly possible. What does Nostradamus mean by the antique dame? Well, all sorts of possibilities there. The commentators on Nostradamus have often suggested that this is a reference to St. Paul's Cathedral, which was burnt down, and not the one we see standing now, was burnt down in the fire of London, and point out that St. Paul's Cathedral was built on the traditional site of a temple to Diana, so the antique dame is Diana. Others of the same sect then would be other Anglican churches, and indeed there were other Anglican churches burnt. So the Nostradamus's Fire of London prophecy in Century 2, 51 is a rather impressive prediction, though indeed a number of the words in it are ambiguous. In Hosea, Old Testament, the Bible, chapter 3, verses 4 and 5, we have this statement regarding Israel's future. The sons of Israel will remain for many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar, without ephod or household idols. Afterward, the sons of Israel return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. They will come trembling to the Lord and to his goodness in the last days. Well, we're given here a list of six things that Israel will lack for many days. They will have neither king or prince. Well, indeed, Israel in their history has been without a king since 44 A.D. And prince is a little broader term in Hebrew than it is in English. In English, it usually means the son or perhaps a brother or something of the king. In Hebrew, it means a government official. And so the prediction seemed to suggest that Israel will have neither the government which was set up by God, the revealed government, we'd say, nor even their own leaders for many days. Without sacrifice or pillar, sacrifice, of course, was a central feature of the religion that Israel was responsible for under the covenant at Sinai. And pillars were used several different ways, but probably the most common term, occurrence of the term, relates to the idolatrous Canaanite pillars that the Israelites were attracted by having come into the land of Canaan from their captivity in Egypt. So probably the point here is that Israel will have neither a Sinai religion nor idolatry. That would then also fit with the last pair, the ephod or teraphim. Ephod was the garment which the high priest wore, and might suggest that they're without the garment or without the high priesthood. And teraphim is the plural for the idols that were used by Canaanites and others to sometimes predict the future, sometimes to represent the inheritance, a right to the inheritance, that sort of thing as well. So probably meaning also neither Sinai religion nor idolatry as well. Well, the interesting thing about Israel's history is that although their race and religion, their nation and religion are based upon the revelation at Sinai and the king which was to be appointed afterwards, mentioned in Deuteronomy 17, that they have lacked a king and sacrifice and ephod, and they also lacked their own government and idolatrous religion, from about A.D. 70 until about 1948. Since then, they've gotten a government back, and as a result of it, a government official, but they still lack five of these six, even at this point. Well, the prophecy goes on to say that there'll be some kind of change at the end, and indeed, we do see an unprecedented turning of Jews to Jesus, seek the Lord and their king, if you like, since the 1960s, so we may be in the process of a fulfillment of that. So here we have a rather striking prediction of six sociological features which the nation of Israel will lack for many days. Let's say, well, 2,000 years nearly is a whole lot of days. Well, yes, it is. And you might say, why use days? Well, perhaps the days is used because the whole point in Hosea is a comparison between the relationship of the prophet Hosea to his wife Gomer as a analog or picture of the relationship of God to his wife Israel, if you like. And so what is many days in Hosea-Gomer relationship then is what we would probably say many years in God-Israel relationship. A second Nostradamus prophecy from centuries 8, quatrain 1, thought by some to be about Napoleon. It reads this way: Pau ne Loron will be more fire than blood, to swim in praise, the great one to flee on the confluence of waters. He will refuse the Agassus entry, great bridge durance, he will hold them imprisoned. Well, many commentators suggested that Pau ne Loron is an anagram for Roy King, Na Paulon, Napoleon. Okay, so you're getting a rough spelling of Napoleon, and the word Roy, French for king, if you like. Well, that's a possibility. Does the rest of it fit Napoleon? Well, the reference to being more fire than blood, they suggest, means he's more soldier than nobleman. That works. Flee on the waters. Don't know of any good examples of Napoleon fleeing from his enemies on the waters. The proposal made, however, is that when he was first arrested at the end of his career, near the end of his career, he was exiled in the Mediterranean on Elba, and then he fled from Elba and back to France and regathered his armies and fought another battle or two. And so the suggestion is that's what's going on there. What's about the Agassiz and imprisoning the Agassiz? Well, it's pointed out that that's a French word for magpie, and short for magpie is pie, and that this is to be an analog for Pius, and in fact, Napoleon imprisoned two of the popes named Pius, Pius VI and Pius VII. He imprisoned them in the southern France near the river Durance, which is the point for the Durance then as well. Well, that one's, fits, but a lot of work is needed, and it is not obvious at least how that goes, but that is a typical characteristic of of Nostradamus anyway, is that his material is very ambiguous. How about this prediction in the Bible, the book of Daniel, chapter 9, 25 and 26, the time of the Messiah? An angel tells the prophet Daniel, "Know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah, the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. Then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing." We suggest here that the weeks is a unit of measurement being used in the prophecy, and the word week in Hebrew is broader than in English, and it is used for weeks of days as well as weeks of years. In fact, the plural used here is used in one of the Intertestament books, the Book of Jubilees, as a reference to the Old Testament Sabbath year cycles, in which the Israelites were to let all their land lie fallow 1 year and seven, the Sabbath year. So we suggest the unit of measurement for this calculation, Sabbath year cycles. The starting point, the decree to rebuild Jerusalem, a candidate for that would be the 20th year of the Persian king Artaxerxes I, in which he allows Nehemiah, see Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 6, to go back to Israel and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. That takes place in 445 B.C., the method of counting that would be used in Jewish circles in antiquity is usually the inclusive method, in which the starting point, the unit of measurement in which the starting point occurred is the first of these, so the first hour, the first day, or in this case, the first sabbatical cycle, and the next one then would be the second and such as well. Well, if you do that, the 69th week is A.D. 28 to 35 A.D., and that A.D. 28 to 35 spans the ministry of Jesus, and Jesus is indeed cut off at that period. Very striking fulfillment there. In Nostradamus' centuries, century 5, quatrain 29, there's a quatrain that's taken by many to refer to Hitler. Here's what it says: "Liberty will not be recovered. A bold, black, base-born, iniquitous man will occupy it. When the material of the bridge is completed, the Republic of Venice will be annoyed by Hister." Hister is an old name for the River Danube. The Nostradamus commentators claim it is an anagram for Hitler. Okay, one letter flipped around and one letter changed. The bridge, they suggest, is a pontoon bridge over the Danube, built in February 1941 during Hitler's invasions. The Republic of Venice, they suggest, would be Italy, example of using a old name, name existing at Nostradamus' time for something that did not have that name in the future. Well, there's that third one. For the third one from Scripture, we pick this one out of Isaiah chapter 53, verses 8 through 10. Suggests this relates to the Messiah's burial and resurrection. By oppression and judgment, says Isaiah, he, and we're in the middle of a section running from Isaiah 40 to 53 called the servant section of Isaiah. This is referring to a God's servant, as you look in the context. By oppression and judgment, he was taken away. And as for his generation, who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgression of my people to whom the stroke was due? His grave was assigned with wicked men, yet he was with a rich man in his death, because he had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. But the Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. If he would render himself as a guilt offering, he will see his offspring. He will prolong his days. The whole context, what we call Isaiah 53, actually starting back in Isaiah 52:13 and running to the end of chapter 53, is an impressive picture of the servant Messiah. He's put to death by oppression and judgment. His death is a substitute for ours. He's buried with a rich man instead of with wicked people, as planned. He's brought back to life after becoming a guilt offering. In fact, the whole atonement theology of the New Testament is essentially built on this passage that was written hundreds of years before the coming of Jesus. As a fourth prophecy in Nostradamus, we want to look at one in his preface to his centuries, section 26 of that preface, where Nostradamus says, from the time I'm writing this, and if you go look at the end of the preface, that's the 1st of March, 1555, from the time I'm writing this, before 177 years, 3 months, and 11 days, by pestilence, long famine and wars, and more still by inundations, the world between this day and that, before and hour after, shall be diminished, and its population so reduced that there'll hardly be hands enough to attend to agriculture. And the lands will be left as long without culture as they have been under tillage. Well, if you calculate the deadline, it looks like this. You're going from the starting point of the 1st of March, 1555, so day 1, month 3, year 1555, and you're going to add 11 days, 3 months, and 177 years. That's the interval. And when you add those up, you get 12th day, 6th month, and year 1732. That is 12 June 1732. Well, nothing of the sort predicted by Nostradamus occurred. A huge depopulation of Europe, so that Europe would hardly have enough hands to do agriculture, and this time period for virtually no agriculture would last as long as Europe had been under agriculture, which would be for thousands of years. Nothing of the sort occurred. Complete bomb. Last example from the Bible, Isaiah chapter 11, verse 11. Regathering of Israel. Then it will happen on that day that the Lord will again recover the second time with his hand the remnant of his people who will remain. From Assyria, Egypt, Pathros, Cush, Elam, Shinar, Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. It's a second regathering. Presumably the first is the return from the Babylonian captivity. The passage names 7 specific areas. Assyria, which would be modern Iraq and Syria. Egypt, which would be modern Egypt, Pathros, which would also be part of modern Egypt, Cush, which would be the Sudan, Elam, which would be Iran, Shinar, which would be Iraq, and Hamath, which would be Syria. Now, the interesting thing is, it also names one general area, the islands, coastlands of the sea, Europe and North Africa, that would presumably be, since the sea for the Israelites is the Mediterranean. The interesting thing is, these are just the areas which have experienced large changes in Jewish population since the 1940s, since Israel has begun to go back to Palestine. Well, that's a quick tour of 4 Nostradamus prophecies and four biblical prophecies. Both the Bible and Nostradamus give some impressive examples of successful prediction. Both predict events which have not yet happened. We haven't looked at any of those. Nostradamus is clearly missed, obscure as he is. The Bible is not clearly missed, though much clearer. Biblical predictions are relatively straightforward. Nostradamus is mostly riddles. It is often difficult to guess what Nostradamus' fulfillment will look like in advance. Biblical predictions are intended to validate the Bible's message as being really from God. What's the purpose of Nostradamus' predictions? The really basic question for any of us is, who will you trust with your destiny? You want to trust someone whose material is mostly riddles? You want to be like what Herodotus tells us Croesus was like when he went to the Oracle of Delphi in ancient times and was concerned about the Persian invasion and said, "Shall I attack the Persians?" And the Oracle answered him, "Attack the Persians, and a great empire will be destroyed." Croesus did, and his great empire was destroyed. Whom will you trust with your destiny, one who's riddling or one who's straightforward?